This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The United States has now announced it is suspending its embargoes against Iraq, and officials are urging the rest of the world to do the same thing. The U.S. is working to introduce a U.N. resolution, possibly as soon as tomorrow, actually, that would lift all United Nations sanctions on Iraq. The proposal would phase out the oil for food program over the next several months, but would still honor some of the existing $13 billion in outstanding contracts for food, medicine, and other goods. Earlier, Secretary of State Colin Powell said that draft would probably be given to all 15 Security Council members this week and would include a, quote, vital role for the United Nations in rebuilding a post-war Iraq. An Israeli missile strike has killed now a member of the militant group Hamas, and a Palestinian man was also shot and killed at a military checkpoint in the Gaza Strip. Hamas spokesperson Abdel Aziz Rantisi says this is now just another new act of terror from the Israelis.
They are really implementing now the roadmap. Roadmap means killing of Palestinians, saving of Israelis, and keeping peace for Israelis on the expense of the blood of Palestinians.
One Hamas official has vowed there will be a, quote, response to the killings today. The Israelis say the attack was part of a policy targeting militant leadership. Palestinians, though, are condemning the act as simple state-sponsored assassination. After an already heavy week of violent weather that has pummeled the Midwest and south portions of the country, more storms could likely be on the way. Forecasters say people throughout the central plains are bracing now for more strong thunderstorms. Parts of Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, and Missouri are all at risk for more heavy tornado activity. Twisters earlier this week claimed dozens of lives in several states throughout the Midwest and southeast. Schools in one Missouri town actually were so badly damaged that it looks like summer vacation may have already started. The Atlanta area is also recovering from 3 days of storms that brought heavy rain, but no damage.
Your mission, Mother's Day shopping. Your goal, find gifts that make mom happy. Your rendezvous point, Radio Shack. Consider the following. A talking picture frame to hold snapshots and a recording of how much you love her, $9.99. The Honeywell Environizer, an electronic air purifier to help mom breathe easier, $99.99. A Palmzire PDA to keep mom organized and on schedule, $99.99. Should you fail these objectives, Mother's Day could self-destruct. Good luck, shopper. Radio Shack. You've got questions. We've got answers.
Cheapo.
Penny Pincher.
Coupon Charlie.
Sure, they're just names, but they hurt.
Ouch.
And there's a place that understands. A place called Hotwire.com. We won't call you things like...
Belt tightener.
Oh, no. Hotwire will help you embrace your frugal side with the lowest hotel prices guaranteed, or we'll give you double the difference. Does that sound like someone who'd call you a...
Tightwad.
Nope. The only thing we'll call you is our kind of customer. Oh, and cheapskate.
Hotwire.com. Fly, sleep, drive. Cheap.
There's still no sign the SARS outbreak is being controlled in China, and the global death toll has now passed 500. China's reported 5 new fatalities, as well as another 146 infections. The World Health Organization has also expanded now its travel warnings in the region to include more provinces in China, as well as the capital of Taiwan. The government's backing away now from its decision to vaccinate a half million healthcare workers against smallpox. CBS News is citing sources who say the federal government will let states decide if they want to administer the controversial vaccine.
Hey, what are you doing to get in shape for the summer?
Lots of sit-ups, man.
Spinning, baby.
Cutting down on the donut.
Whatever you're doing to get in shape for the summer, make sure you get your Toyota in shape for summer driving. Bring it into your Toyota dealer before you hit the road. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts.
I am walking to work. Of course, I work out of my house.
Make an appointment with your Toyota dealer today and log on to Toyota.com/owners for valuable service special coupons.
At least 30 people are now known to have been killed when a bus was hit by a train earlier in Hungary. That double-decker was carrying dozens of German tourists when the accident happened. More on the story from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
The train from Budapest is said to have plowed into the bus as it was crossing a railway line near Siofok on the shores of Lake Balaton. It's around 60 miles southwest of the capital. The coach, which was carrying 38 passengers, reportedly sliced in half before bursting into flames. One section of it was dragged about 150 meters along the rail tracks. The train was derailed and the driver injured, but none of its passengers was hurt. Ambulances and helicopters have taken the injured to nearby hospitals. A local police chief described the scene as horrible. Suzanne Chislett reporting.
And finally, on the economic front today, first-time unemployment claims fell by 28,000 in the week ending May 3rd. However, the less volatile four-week moving average actually hit its highest level now in more than a year. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Kids fight over toys, and mom says share. Good advice for the playground and the road. When I come back, we'll talk peaceful coexistence between cars and motorcycles.
We're at the track asking drivers why they recommend Champion Platinum Power spark plugs. Here comes Matt Kenseth and his Ford. Matt, why do you trust Champion? He said Champion provides long-lasting power. Here comes Dale Earnhardt Jr. in his Chevy. Dale said Champion has the right technology. So use Champion in your car no matter what make it is. Champion, the world's favorite spark plug. What'd he say?
Get new Champion Platinum Power spark plugs at a leading auto parts store or retailer near you.
Global detente's important, but drivers of four-wheel vehicles and two-wheeled motorcycles could use some local negotiation in sharing the road. Here's a start. Cyclist, act like full-sized vehicles by claiming road space nearer centerline, encouraging drivers to pass with a wider berth. Four-wheel vehicles, don't move to one side to see what's going on in slow traffic. Stick to the middle of your lane. This position discourages cyclists from weaving between cars. Now that's shuttle diplomacy. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us. Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. We're broadcasting from west to east on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast on the Sirius satellite network from the Arctic to the equator and being listened to in Europe. We've got emails from Scotland and England and all across Asia on the Internet. Live streaming from www.tomhartman.com. www.ieamericaradio.com, and welcome to our listeners from www.radiopower.org, which is playing this program, replaying this program from 5 to 7 and from 7 to 9 every day on their website. So yesterday we talked about the Iroquois Confederacy, and Troy from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, posted a message on the message board at tomhartman.com. He says, Tom, you may have touched upon these points during yesterday's show. I missed parts of it. Forgive me if I'm repeating something. He's not. Regarding the comparison between the U.S. Constitution and the Iroquois Confederacy, he says, I think the Founding Fathers missed some important aspects, most notably the power bestowed upon Iroquois women and the expectation that their leaders lead nearly ascetic lives. Iroquois leaders did not hoard material goods. In Iroquois society, Troy writes, no one would starve unless the whole tribe was starving. There was also little social stratification within the tribes. Although each tribe had leaders, they did not have control over the population, but acted instead in accordance with the wishes of the tribe. He makes a very good point. It's very accurate. He goes on to say, men were the primary voices in leadership, but the women were the power behind them. I would add, Troy doesn't document it, but I talk about this in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, a book I wrote that has quite a bit of information about the Iroquois in it, that in five of the six Iroquois nations, the Iroquois being a confederacy of six, originally five, Native American nations in the northeastern, what's now the northeastern United States, that in five of these six nations, there was this, written into the Iroquois Confederacy Constitution was this thing that every decision has to be made in the context of its impact on the seventh generation. And that was our quote for the day a couple days ago. And what the Iroquois knew was that there was one group among them who was more concerned about the seventh generation than the other group, and that one group was the women. And so in five of those six nations, only women were allowed to vote. And when Jefferson, Franklin, and Madison principally brought them in to participate, 34 members of the Iroquois Confederacy, to come and sit in on the deliberations at the first U.S. Constitutional Convention at which the Constitution was written. The founders said, well, these guys, they got it right that only one gender should vote, but they got the wrong gender. But the Iroquois had a very good reason for that, and they understood that wars and belligerent nationalism tend to be testosterone-driven behaviors. The belligerence has its place, but not in the grand scheme of things, not in when we're planning for what is going to happen in the seventh generation. And can you imagine how different the decisions would be made in our government and in our corporations if our decisions were made based on, as the Iroquois required, their impact on the seventh generation from today? Can you imagine just how incredibly different it would be? He goes on to say, Troy from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, Iroquois leaders were regarded as servants of the people. And in order to maintain the people's respect, they were expected to give away the plunders of war or the presence of treaty. Typically, tribal leaders were the poorest members of the tribe. Not only material goods were equally distributed among tribal members. It was the opinion of Benjamin Franklin that amongst the Iroquois, quote, happiness is more generally and equally diffused than in our civilized societies. Thank you, Troy, for sharing that with us, a great message there. I posted on the message board, the radio show message board, at tomhartman.com. We have well over 1,000 members there who are participating and posting messages and whatnot, and I encourage you to visit it and say hello. Our question for today, are the interests for this hour, are the interests of the oil industry damaging democracy in America? Could it be that one industry has so much power, so much influence in Washington, D.C., that it has succeeded in placing one of its own as President of the United States, one of its own as Vice President of the United States, one of its own, several of its own, as senior members of the administration, and has bought the compliance of an entire political party? Could it be? Is it possible? Well, first, let's back up a little bit and look at the picture in a little broader context. The population of the planet, from the beginning of human civilization, we've been talking about the Iraqi beginnings of civilization, that modern civilization began in Sumeria, which is now called Iraq, in Uruk, this ancient city just north of Baghdad. And this was 6,000 or 7,000 years ago. And there's, in the Epic of Gilgamesh, the oldest known written story, there's the story of, I think his name was Umanipeth, or something close to that, who was a righteous man, and one of the gods told him that he had to build an ark and prepare for the great flood. And the story of Noah is virtually identical, only it was written 1,000 years later, to the story of this guy who is in the Epic of Gilgamesh. So this is not only the origin of civilization, but it's also the cradle, the beginning of the thinking of many of the major religions of the world. And at that time, 6,000 or 7,000 years ago, when that civilization was forming, of course, there were many other civilizations all over the world. There were great civilizations in South America. There were native communities and aboriginal communities all around the world. But, looking just at that civilization and a world population, what you find is that at that time, 6,000 or 7,000 years ago, there were fewer than a billion people on the planet. In fact, from the beginning, the earliest evidence of fully modern humans, 200,000 years ago, more or less, up until about the time of Christ, 2,000 years ago, there were only a quarter billion, 250 million people on the entire planet. At the time, 2,000 years ago, the time that our society measures time to, year zero, there were 250 million people on the earth. And the Earth was capable of supporting them with what's called current sunlight. Sunlight would fall on the ground. It would drive plants. Animals would eat those plants. We would eat those plants. We would eat the animals. And on it went. And we would use the animals for plowing and whatnot. Population continued to grow with the agricultural revolution to the point where we reached a half a billion, 500 million, by the year 1,000, 1,000 years ago. And we reached our, and then what happened was we started coming up against the limits of how many people could be fed with just the current sunlight falling on the earth. And coincidentally, about 1,000 years ago, in several parts of the world, but particularly in Europe, they discovered that there was this ancient sunlight under the ground. It was coal. And it was the energy of the sun that had been captured millions of years ago and compressed under the ground. And by burning this, they could heat their houses, and so they could cut down forests because they didn't have to have the firewood. They could cut down forests, convert them into croplands, grow more crops, produce more, feed more people, which would produce more people. And so population started to grow on the strength of this ancient sunlight. And so by the year 1800, we reached our first 1 billion people. All of human history, 1 billion people in 1800. Well, by that time, we were starting to get a little better at using this ancient sunlight. In the 1800s, in the 19th century, we started using oil, another form of ancient sunlight. Now, this stuff is 300 to 400 million years old. They're not making it anymore. If you put a drop of gasoline on your hand, you could think of it as dinosaur blood, except that the dinosaurs lived only about 100 million years ago, and the gasoline is 400 million years old. It is truly a fossil. They say fossil fuel, it's not just an expression. It is literally the case. So in 1800, we hit our first 1 billion people. Well, it didn't take 200,000 years to hit the second billion because now we were using ancient sunlight to produce more and more food. We, instead of having 100 horses pulling a plow or one horse pulling a plow, we could have 100 horses pulling that plow in a tractor. And so the second billion took only 130 years, 1930. Our third billion took only 30 years, 1960. I remember when Jack Kennedy was inaugurated President of the United States, there were only 3 billion people on the planet, less than half of what there is today. Fewer than half. Our third billion took only 30 years, 1960. Our fourth billion took only 14 years, 1974. Our fifth billion took only 13 years, 1987. Our sixth billion took only 11 years, 1999. And this explosion of population was made possible by oil. Pure and simple. If oil were to end tomorrow morning, 5.5 billion people would starve. Because the ability of the planet with current sunlight to feed people is only adequate to feed about 500 million people, 500 million people. So you can see oil is this very critical thing. It made a population of 6 billion possible. And our oil supplies are in danger. And this, you know, again, back to our question, are the interests of the oil industry damaging democracy in America? Well, this is pretty critical stuff. It's like asking if somebody was in control of the blood supply in your body and they decided to go their own way, would it be of danger to your body? This is the blood of our nation. It's the blood of our economy. It's ultimately the blood of democracy. And when we look at the oil industry's statistics, go check out British Petroleum's website, for example. They have one of the most informative of the oil companies. I'm not. You can look at Greenpeace's statistics. They say it's essentially the same thing. World Watch Institute. There's some great ecological organizations out there. But let's take the most optimistic, industry-friendly numbers that that exist. Go to BP.com. British Petroleum's website, click on our company, click on reserves, click on oil, and you will see, number one, who owns the oil in the world, number two, how much there is, and then when you track that back to how much longer that amount of oil is going to last, if you take the consumption patterns, how much we're consuming every day, and you divide it into the amount of oil that's left, you discover the world has 20 to 40 years worth of oil, and then it's gone. Thus, the fighting has begun. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back after this break.
You're strapped into 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Free. Every day at Domino's, you get something free. A cheesy, gooey pizza and great taste we guarantee. Delivered hot, fresh, and steamy, you'll feel like you're in Waikiki. Buy a large Domino's pizza, get a medium one topping pizza free.
Right now at Domino's, it's 2-for-1 pizza days. Buy any large pizza at menu price, get a medium one topping pizza free. What a deal.
Buy a large Domino's pizza, get a medium one topping pizza free.
Get the door. It's 2-for-1 pizza days at Domino's. Limited time offer, prices and terms may vary.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to the lifestyles of the wet and stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Test of our progress, said President Franklin Roosevelt, the test of our progress is not whether we add more to the abundance of those who have much. The test of our progress is whether we provide enough for those who have too little. Is compassion dead? We'll be talking about this next week, as I recall. An interesting article at the very top of CommonDreams.org today, the article about the power, the right to power. Should the strong dominate the weak? Is that how nature really organizes? Is that how human society should be organized? Should leaders lie to their people because that's what you have to do? Interesting questions. We'll get into those a little later. Right now we're talking about, are the interests of the oil industry damaging democracy in America? Here on the Tom Hartman Program, 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937. President Nixon and President Carter both suggested that the United States should be conserving oil. The reason why, well, it's pretty clear. For example, right now, the world is producing, and produces is a weird word, because if I bring you a glass of water and you drink half of it, and there's still half left, as you're drawing the rest of that out, say you're drinking it with a straw, is that glass producing water? No. The world is actually consuming oil that was produced 300 to 400 million years ago, and there hasn't been any made since then, and there won't be any made for 100 or million years or more. The world is consuming 75 million barrels a day. Of that, the United States consumes almost 20 million barrels. That's 26% of the world's consumption every day, 4 or 5% of the world's population. As Richard Nixon pointed out in one of his speeches, I don't recall the speech, but I remember it well. And we only, of that almost 20 million barrels a day that we consume in the United States, how much do you think that we actually generate here domestically? 8 million barrels. See, we've wiped out our oil wells on the East Coast. In the late 19th century, early 20th century, Pennzoil, Pennsylvania oil, the very best oil there is, those wells are dry. Then there was Standard Oil of Ohio, pumping great oil from Ohio. Those wells are dry. They had wells in Michigan. They had wells in Indiana. They had wells in New York and New Jersey. New York and New Jersey were covered with oil wells in the late 19th century. They're all dry now. We pumped them out. They'd be empty. So we went to Oklahoma and Texas, and now many of those wells are dry, although we're still pumping some there, some very large oil fields. We went to California. We got the oil that bubbled out of the ground. That's really cheap oil. You can take oil that just bubbles out of the ground. It costs about $1.50 a barrel to collect that stuff. That's like the Iraqi oil. Iraqi oil comes out of the ground under so much of its own pressure that they don't even have pumps in Iraq. They just run pipes down to the sea, and it just runs down to the sea by gravity. It's the cheapest oil in the world, $1.50 a barrel. But in California, we consumed all of that stuff. In Texas, we sucked up all that stuff. In Oklahoma, we got rid of all the cheap oil. And in Alaska, all except for the Anwar region, they're not even pumping oil out of Alaska now, for all practical purposes. In fact, it's throwing the state into a fiscal crisis. Now we have to put in pumps to suck out the last little bit from these wells. And so we're looking around the world because we are importing 58% of our oil. And what nation has three times as much oil as the entire United States? Three times as much as the entire United States? I'll tell you when we come back from this break. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day. Don't like the sound of that?
Tough. You got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Two disturbing provisions that would give many companies breaks in payments to worker pension funds have been added to legislation currently pending before the House of Representatives. The first would give the airline industry a five-year vacation from making catch-up payments into already underfunded pension funds. The second would allow companies that employ large amounts of blue-collar workers to recalculate pension contributions at a lower rate. The reasoning is based on a report from the Treasury Department that says blue-collar workers don't tend to live as long as white-collar workers do, but the chairman of the Treasury panel that authored the report tells the New York Times their statistics are being misapplied.
Carrying picket signs and wearing scrubs, hundreds of Pennsylvania nurses filled their state capitol yesterday hoping to win changes to a health care system they say is in crisis. Registered nurse Celeste Gonzalez says a focus on the bottom line leaves too few nurses tending too many patients, putting lives at risk.
There's been some national studies done that are showing that patients are dying in hospitals instead of being saved and are sicker, getting sicker instead of better, directly related to the nurse-patient ratio.
Pennsylvania's two largest nurses' unions are lending their support to two bills that would lower nurse-to-patient ratio and end mandatory overtime. The unions say similar laws have improved health care in states like California and Oregon.
French airline maker Bombardier is threatening to cut 25% of the workforce at its three assembly plants in the Montreal area unless the workers agree to wage freezes and smaller layoffs. The company says it's looking to delay pay hikes and cut 1,000 jobs in order to be competitive in a multi-billion-dollar bid to build hundreds of jets for U.S. Airways. And if the workers' unions don't agree to concessions now, as many as 3,000 jobs go later.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of being yelled at, preached at, lectured to, demagogued, ridiculed, moralized, proselytized, and abused? Why don't you try something new? Join me, Nancy Skinner, on IE America Radio Network, where we can discuss the issues of the day from a whole new and healthier perspective. Nobody gets fed to the lions, everybody has a right to their opinions, and the best thing is you walk away feeling better about life.
That's Nancy Skinner's Radio Vox Pop, weekdays from 10 to noon Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Peter Werby reminding you that my show is now being broadcast from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network. It's the same show filled with engaged, intelligent talk featuring not just you, the listener, but also a wide range of interesting guests. So if you want to leave right-wing hate radio in the 20th century where it belongs, join me, Peter Werby, weekdays 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time for something entirely different.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking to you on IE on radio stations from coast to coast on the Sirius satellite, broadcasting all around the Northern Hemisphere on the streaming live on the Internet all across the world. www.ieamericaradio.com and radiopower.org. And you can find our bulletin board and our chat room at tomhartman.com. The chat room is now open. If you want to post a message there, I can read it on the air. You're welcome to call. The number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. And I said, helping you win the water cooler war. You know what that is. It's where you go to work and you're standing around the water cooler or whatever the place is at work, the lunch, you know, sitting at the lunch counter or whatever, and somebody says, and you just, I wish I just had some little factoid that I could use to, you know, if I just understood that a little better, you know. And there's so much misinformation out there. It just boggles my mind the way the neoconservatives have been laying out lies. I suppose it's polite to say it's misinformation, but just plain old flat-out lies about the reality of some of these situations, and certainly aggressive misinformation. And so many people, because they don't understand the genesis of these situations, they're not really discussed in our media. We don't learn many of these things in school. It's so hard to just take on those arguments. So here on the Tom Hartman program, we're committed to helping you win the water cooler wars. And today, in this hour, we're talking about, are the interests of the oil industry damaging democracy in America? And this goes back to our Bill of Rights for the 21st Century, which is posted on our website, on the radio show website at tomhartman.com. You click on the radio show link. Item number 5 says, building a civilization on liquefied dinosaur bones and thinking it will last forever makes no sense. Well, as we can find out if we go check out the website of British Petroleum, BP.com, the oil supply of the planet, and this is after over 300,000 dry. In fact, you can't empty a well down to zero. You can't take all of the oil out of an oil well. It's not possible. You can get it down to 20-30%, something like that. And in that last 20-30%, they actually have to go into what they call injection drilling, where they inject steam into the ground to blow the oil out, to dissolve the oil out of porous sandstone and things like that, and bring it back up to the surface. And it gets very expensive. Very expensive. So you've got these giant wells driving out in California, going back and forth and back and forth, tick, tick, tick. And so are the interests of the oil industry damaging democracy in America? I was in Germany a couple of months ago. Actually, this was about 6 months. Well, the last time I was there was last month, but the first time I discovered this was about 6 months ago. A friend of mine picked me up at the train station in Kulmbach, and we went out to the car, to his car, and he said, we were at the back of the car loading my suitcase in, and he said, do you smell anything interesting? Do you smell anything funny? And I sniffed, and I said, French fries. And he said, yeah, French fries. He said, it's the car. And I noticed the exhaust pipe smelled like French fries. I said, what is it? We got in the car and we're driving off. And he says, this car is being powered by used cooking oil. It was a Volkswagen diesel, and it was being powered by what's called biodiesel. And we stopped at a gas station, and there was a tank of benzene, is what they call it in Germany, regular gasoline, high-octane gasoline, diesel fuel. And there was their own pump that was called biodiesel. And what it is recycled fat from restaurants, from commercial applications, and also just, you know, the cheapest of the varieties of grown vegetable oil. And it was pure vegetable oil. It wasn't mixed with petroleum. And because the government of Germany, see, Germany doesn't have any oil reserves, which is one of the problems that Hitler ran into in his drive across Europe. It was why he tried to take Iraq. He tried to invade Kurdistan, or tried to get the Kurds. A friend of mine was one of the people who parachuted into Kurdistan in the 40s to try and get the Kurds to align themselves with Hitler so that he could get their oil. And in fact, this guy, Gottfried Mueller, actually designed the flag that's used today by one of the two major Kurdish independent movements. In any case, The Germany does not have any domestic oil reserves, and so they have a big incentive to promote something other than the use of oil. And so what they've done is they've said, if you're going to use petroleum-based fuel, gasoline or diesel fuel, you're going to have to pay a huge tax on it. So it costs about $5 a gallon. It's in euros per liter there, but you do the math. It's about $5 a gallon for a gallon of gas in Germany, and it's been that way for decades. It's been there as it's been that way as long as I've been going to Germany. The first time I went there was in 1978, as I recall, or 76. But what they said is, if you're going to use vegetable oil, then we're not going to tax it anywhere near as heavily. It'll just be a small tax that reflects the cost of providing and the infrastructure for transportation of the oil and things like that. And so the benzene, the regular normal gasoline, it's like 97 pfennig or cents, you know, 0.97 euros, 97 cents a liter or whatever it was, as I recall. And the biodiesel, was about half that. Now, what was really ironic was that the week that I was there in Germany, I went from Germany to England, and as I arrived in England, I got one of the papers at the airport. I was reading it in the taxi on the way into town, and there was a story about a guy who'd been arrested in England, in the UK, for modifying his diesel car so that it would run on vegetable oil, and going to the supermarket and buying vegetable oil in 5-gallon drums and pouring it into his car and powering his car with this. He was arrested for this. The charge? Failure to pay his taxes, his petroleum tax. The United Kingdom has oil reserves. They've got their North Shore oil reserves. And so they have decided not to encourage people to use vegetable oil, but rather to encourage people to use petroleum products. Whereas Germany is doing the exact opposite. Germany knows they've got this residue from French fries. They can use that stuff. Yeah, everything's cool. So here we have this from the Bloomberg report. Mayor Bloomberg, the great Republican mayor of New York, his news service. On May 1st of this week, or of last week, I guess, May 1st would have been, the U.S. and U.K. went to war against Iraq because of the Middle East country's oil reserves, an advisor to British Prime Minister Tony Blair said. Sir Jonathan Porritt, head of the Sustainable Development Commission, which advises Blair's government, said the prospect of winning access to Iraqi oil was, quote, a very large factor, end quote, in the Allies' decision to attack Iraq in March. Quote, I don't think the war would have happened if Iraq didn't have the second largest oil reserves in the world, Porritt said in a Sky News television interview. Could it be? Is it possible? Well, Iraq has the second largest proven oil reserves in the world, and they actually may well be the first. According to the CIA, the oil reserves of Iraq are underestimated. They're largely, most often reported as being around 130 million barrels, a billion barrels. But 130 billion barrels is just what's been tapped into. There are huge oil fields in Iraq that have never even been drilled into. And so we find on the Security Council's site, quote, new exploration will probably raise Iraq's reserves to the 200 to 300 billion barrel level of high-grade, extraordinarily cheap-to-produce crude oil. Now, that's more than Saudi Arabia has, or in the region of Saudi Arabia, and more than anybody else on Earth, leading to a gold rush of profits for international oil firms in a post-Saddam setting. The four giant firms located in the U.S. and the U.K. have been keen to get back into Iraq, from which they were excluded with the nationalization of 1972. Now, this is what happened in 72. It's also what happened in Venezuela. And all of a sudden, once the president of Venezuela did this a couple of years ago, he said, you know, the oil here in this country is a resource of this nation. And so these American oil companies that came into our nation and said, and bought up land from local people and then drilled down and found oil and pumped that oil out and said, hey, it's ours, ha-ha, and, you know, we'll pay you a tax on it, but it's ours. The president of the country said, no, I don't think so. That's our natural resources. You can buy it from us. We'll sell it to you. If it costs $2 a barrel to pump and the price on the open market is $20 a barrel, we'll sell it to you for $10 or $12 a barrel. But we'll make that $8 or $10 profit per barrel, and then you can make a profit in addition. And all of a sudden, there's this movement to overthrow the democratically elected president of Venezuela, and the movement And you really had to read the newspapers carefully to get this. It was there. But it was very much minimized. The movement was led by the bankers and the largest corporations in Venezuela. The movement to overthrow the government of their own country. This was not a people's uprising. The demonstrations, by and large, were demonstrators who were rented, who were paid for. People were paid to come out in the streets and protest against this guy. And it turns out that they were paid for by companies that had ties to the United States. And then we have the situation in Iraq in 1972, Saddam. Just prior to that, the Ayatollah rose to power in Iran, threw out the Shah of Iran, the guy that we had put in there in the 1950s. And as soon as that happened, of course, the United States said, well, if Iran is no longer an instrument of our power or our puppet state or whatever you want to call it, we've got to have a power in that region. And you could argue that maybe that's a legitimate thing. I don't want to get into policy discussions here. It's a good discussion to have, but not right at this moment, I don't think. But the United States said, we've got to have somebody in that region who works for us, our employee. And so they helped a guy overthrow the head of Iraq, and that was Saddam Hussein. We brought him to power. And one of the things that Saddam did that we didn't much appreciate was he nationalized the oil. He said the oil companies, the four major U.S. and Iraq and U.K. oil companies that controlled the oil in Iraq in 1972, had to start buying it from the Iraqi government. So the oil of Iraq costs about $1.50 a barrel to produce. And the Iraqi government said, yeah, you can buy it from us at spot prices. We'll sell it to you for $20 a barrel or whatever the price is on the open market, and we'll keep the profit. And you can refine it and make all your money on refining oil and selling gasoline. That's what you do. And it really stuck in the craw of them. And of course, French companies, Russian companies, Chinese, Japanese companies all had deals with Saddam to buy that oil. And all very much would love to have been pumping that oil because it's so cheap to pump to get it out. So here we have this story. But in a post-war military government imposed by Washington, the U.S.-UK companies expect to overcome their rivals and gain the most lucrative oil deals that will be worth hundreds of billions or even trillions of dollars, not in revenue, in profits in the coming decades. Hundreds of billions to trillions of dollars in profits. The Iraq has three times the level of oil as the United States. The administration's plans face an even more immediate hurdle now. This from the World Watch Institute this week. We have no legal title to Iraq's oil. Control of that oil currently rests with the United Nations. What are we going to do about this? The UN says, hey, we represent the people of the world. We have taken over representing the people of Iraq. We control the oil through the Oil for Food program. And the United States says, no, we want to control the oil, and we want to turn it over, in fact, to the company that we gave it to. We'll be back. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network.
How is the GM 24-hour test drive different from the average test drive? It's about, 23 hours and 45 minutes longer. Long enough to take a GM car or truck to work, to keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about somesies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
Well, the ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The interests of the oil industry damaging democracy in America? That question this hour on the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Well, we find that Halliburton apparently is doing very well. This corporation was given a contract under a no-bid process, no bids, to, quote, operate facilities and distribute the products of Iraq, end quote. And it only came to light yesterday. It only came to light yesterday that Halliburton, before the war started, was given a contract to pump the oil from Iraq and to profit from it. According to the Associated Press, the Halliburton contract is at with another long-term deal was at odds with administration statements that Iraq's oil belongs to the Iraqi people. Apparently now that oil belongs to Halliburton. And the Wall Street Journal says U.S. to use a corporate structure to run Iraq's vast oil industry. This is 3 days ago. The U.S. government is structuring Iraq's vast oil industry much like a corporation. And the structure, which will take the place of the traditional ministry system, will have a chief executive who will represent them at OPEC meetings and the like. Philip J. Carroll, former chief executive of Shell Oil Company, the U.S. arm of Royal Dutch Shell, will be chairman of the board. The American-style structure and the appointments may rankle those who believe the U.S. is wielding too much power over the occupied nation. Harry in Washington, Tony in Washington, D.C., you've got a comment here about the oil in the last minute or so we've got on the show. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program, Tony.
Yes, I was just wondering why I didn't hear none of these righteous right-wingers come up and say, no, they wanted to just go ahead and free the Iraqis, but they wanted to free the oil.
Yeah. Well, you know, originally it was the program, the invasion strategy was called Operation Iraqi Liberation. And the word got out on that, and somebody noticed that that stands for OIL, Operation Iraqi Liberation. So they changed it to Operation Iraqi Freedom. Tony, thanks for the call and the comment. It's the end of the hour here. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network, where we're helping you win the water cooler wars. And our talking points don't come from the right-wing think tanks or the RNC, but instead come right out of today's news and out of my head. Thanks for being on the show, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes here, right after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. A top U.S. military commander today is cautioning there is still much to do to, quote, create the right environment of safety and security within Iraq. Lieutenant General David McKiernan talked about the situation in Iraq earlier during a news conference from Baghdad.
There is still crime. There's still looting. There's still a large percentage of young ex-military Iraqis that need to be put back to work, need to earn a salary, and be part of the solution.
McKiernan says progress in that transformation will happen only with the cooperation of the Iraqi people. Many Iraqis, though, are still expressing impatience with the post-war U.S. occupation of their country. The U.S., meanwhile, says it is lifting sanctions against Iraq, and it wants the United Nations to follow suit. Washington, Britain, and Spain plan to ask the Security Council within just days to lift the financial penalties put into effect nearly 13 years ago after the first Gulf War to punish Saddam Hussein for the invasion of Kuwait. France, Russia, and China, however, have said they would prefer the sanctions be only suspended rather than lifted entirely. President Bush yesterday, though, said no country can in good conscience support keeping those sanctions in place in light of the present and still deteriorating humanitarian situation within Iraq. The World Health Organization has now issued a new travel alert to Asia as the number of deaths from SARS has passed 500 globally. International aid has also now starting to pour into China as authorities there battle to contain the deadly virus. Japan and Germany are among the nations that have already sent medical equipment. The United States Ambassador to China, Clark Rant, says America is pledging monetary support.
I have the great honor, on behalf of the United States government and of the American people, to present to Executive Vice Chairman Wang Lijun of the Red Cross Society of China a donation of 500,000 United States dollars.
The World Health Organization has issued a warning against all non-essential travel to the Taiwanese capital of Taipei, as well as two more Chinese provinces.
It's almost Mother's Day, and you know what that means. It's time to pick up the phone. A new Verizon wireless phone for mom from Radio Shack. Get her the Samsung A310 for just $24.99 after Samsung mail-in rebate. That's a $75 savings. Radio Shack's experts will even help you choose the service plan and accessories mom will love. So pick up the phone and make mom's day at Radio Shack. Offer good through 5/25 with two-year activation. $175 early termination fees apply. Phone is $249.99 without activation. See stores for details.
Cheapo.
Penny Pincher.
Coupon Charlie.
Sure, they're just names, but they hurt.
Ouch.
And there's a place that understands. A place called Hotwire.com. We won't call you things like
belt tightener.
Oh, no. Hotwire will help you embrace your frugal side with the lowest hotel prices guaranteed, or we'll give you double the difference. Does that sound like someone who'd call you a
tightwad?
Nope. The only thing we'll call you is our kind of customer. Oh, and cheapskate.
Hotwire.com. Fly, sleep, drive. Cheap.
The United States Senate says it is now backing NATO expansion. Senators have now voted to formally ratify the addition of 7 Eastern European nations to the military alliance. That vote was, as a matter of fact, unanimous. The nations to be added are Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Slovenia, Slovakia, Bulgaria, and Romania. A vote by the House of Representatives on the protocol is not required. All member nations of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, however, must ratify the expansion. So far, Canada, Norway, and the U.S. have done so.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage says the beginning of a dialogue is now emerging finally between nuclear rivals Pakistan and India.
I would pronounce myself as cautiously optimistic that we're at the beginning of what might be a very good process. Seems to be a certain confidence in Pakistan, a certain confidence in India about the ability to address all aspects of a relationship. And I think that's a very good basis on which to move forward.
Speaking at a news conference earlier after talks with Pakistani officials, Armitage says he's encouraged by contacts made by both countries' prime ministers. Officials in South Korea are getting more concerned over the Communist North's apparent nuclear program. The Korea Defense Daily says Defense Minister Cho Young-kil wrote a letter to his armed forces chiefs expressing fear the, quote, possibilities of North Korea committing various provocations are rising. He says the security situation on the peninsula has entered a phase now when, quote, you cannot predict what will happen in the near future. Cho called for preparations for a full combat posture against any attacks to be made a top priority. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Life in a fishbowl. No, not in an aquarium. The behaviors of these specimens were observed while they were driving their cars. When we come back, I'll tell you what you've been doing on the road.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
Stretch limos with tinted windows aside. What we do while driving is on display for everyone to see. And according to an Exxon poll of 1,000 drivers, our top 3 favorite activities are 1 in 5 of us flirt with other drivers.
Another 40% actually reach out and touch someone with our cell phones. And the number one private activity that 70% of us perform for public view is the ever-popular eating. Now that gives dining and dashing a whole new meaning. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program, broadcasting from coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, covering North and Central America from Alaska to Panama, and streaming live on the Internet with listeners all around the world from www.ieamericaradio.com, noon to 2 Eastern Time every day, and on radiopower.org. From 5 to 7 and from 7 to 9 every day, 5 days a week, weekdays of the week, the Tom Hartman radio program. Klaus of Eugene, Oregon, from Eugene, Oregon, member number 1123 on the bulletin board at tomhartman.com, says, posted a message during our last segment. He says, so whether biodiesel or oil from any other source via thermal depolymerization, for example, how likely is it that the oil industry will merely shift to alternative sources of oils rather than other truly alternative sources of energy? I assume you mean things like hydrogen or electricity generated by wind and things, fuel cells, community fuel cells. He says the right thing to do needs to be the path of least resistance and made the most profitable as well if we are to encourage otherwise. Brilliant point, Klaus. I really appreciate it. When you folks send us emails, post on the bulletin board, give us feedback about the show, it is so much appreciated. I really enjoy hearing from you, hearing your comments. Sometimes it's a very useful calibration to what I'm doing and what I'm talking about. Your suggestions for how to make the show better or what you like and don't like, all of that stuff is great. And Klaus, good point. Absolutely good point. You know, Nixon, I started that whole rant in the last hour and I didn't wrap it up. Nixon and Carter both were big advocates of conservation. It was the oil crisis in 72 and 73 when Nixon first tried to respond to it with price controls, and that just, you know, spun things out of control as a result of the Arab oil embargo, that he said, hey, wait a minute, you know, our country is at the mercy of other nations because we're importing so much of our oil. And of course, that was when the Japanese started coming in with smaller cars. They've been making them for years. In fact, Volkswagen, you know, the Beetle had been around in the United States, very popular since the 60s. But suddenly they really took off. And the government was not passing laws explicitly, but they were encouraging this sort of thing. And the Nixon administration and Nixon himself was talking about this. And then Jimmy Carter was promoting these things very aggressively, promoting alternative fuel sources, alternative energy sources. And if you were in the solar business, there was tax credits. There were tax credits. You could get tax credits on your income taxes if you put solar heating collectors on your roof, or you winterized your house. There were all these incentives to save oil. And then the Reagan-Bush administration came into power, and of course the vice president was an oil guy, Reagan's main backers included some of the largest construction, automobile, and oil companies in the world. And so Reagan not only repealed Carter's tax credits and tax incentives to industry to behave in a energy-conserving fashion, but his first official act of office, the first thing he did on the first day that he occupied the White House, Reagan and Bush, the first thing that they did was they took down the solar collectors from the roof of the White House. And, of course, Bill Clinton put them back up. And one of the first things that George W. did when he came into office was to take them back down again. So those who say that there's no difference between the Democrats and Republicans, I beg to differ, at least in this area. Bill, and just to wrap this up, King Hubbard, who I started talking about in the last hour, was suggesting that there was this Hubbard peak when oil would start to get scarce. And he, in 1956, he projected that this would happen in 1998. And apparently he was about 5 years off. Most scientists now are saying that the Hubbard peak is being hit right now, or was last year, that we've consumed 50% of the world's oil. We've consumed about a trillion barrels of oil, and there's about that much left in the ground. And Hubbard in 1956, said that in 98, when he thought the Hubbard peak would be hit, that we could expect to see wars beginning around the world over those territories that held the world's remaining oil. He wrote this in 1956. And sure enough, Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Oh, and I keep going off on this. Let me come back and finish this here. It's my ADD, folks. Number five on our list of the Bill of Rights for the 21st century. It's on our website at tomhartman.com. Building a civilization on liquefied fossils and then thinking it will last forever makes no sense. According to British Petroleum, world oil reserves are enough to sustain us only into our children's lifetimes, and then we'll run out. We must institute a Manhattan Project type of effort to create viable energy sources that are not dependent on fossil fuels, and in the meantime, take immediate steps to reduce use of and preserve our precious stores before they're exhausted. And going back to that point that Klaus had made in his email from Eugene, Oregon, or his posting to our bulletin board, Klaus said, do you think the oil companies are going to just shift to, you know, other forms of oil or whatever? How are they going to do this? Well, in fact, they are. And they're moving very quickly. Shell Oil now is one of the largest manufacturers of solar cells in the world. And I'm pretty sure it's Shell. I saw an ad for this last year in one of the like Home Power magazines, how to build your own windmill kind of things. And they had the full page ad on the back of the magazine. I'm almost certain it was Shell. I may be wrong. That said that they were selling shingles for your house. So you replace your regular asphalt shingles with these things, and they are PV cells, photovoltaic cells. They generate electricity, and you can generate your own electricity. The oil companies, with the exception of the American oil companies, the European oil companies, the Asian oil companies, are some of the most aggressive in moving into these new and alternative technologies. British Petroleum and Shell, Royal Dutch Shell, being the two leaders in that industry. Tim in Hartford, Connecticut, has a comment about oil. Tim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, Tom, I've got to take strong exception with you saying that when people like Nader or others say that there's little difference between the Democrats and Republicans, you know, the last 8 years of the Democratic administration could have done so much more as far as helping out the small farmers with wind, tremendous tax breaks that they could have been doing. I think that they just kind of inched along as far as real changes as far as energy is concerned. You know, they didn't push for higher standards for cars.
Yep.
They didn't, you know, certainly one of the reasons I joined the Green Party was because I saw what Bill Clinton was doing in Arkansas with the nuclear power plants.
Yes.
Do you ever hear Clinton, Gore, or the Democrats talk about nuclear power and the phase out?
No,
I mean,
didn't.
It's certainly one of the most dangerous, and with the amount of terrorism that, you know, is potentially there. You know, we're still incredibly dependent upon nuclear power instead of these alternatives.
Yes.
And we're going, as taxpayers, we're going to, you know, continue the, you know, bizarre process of paying for the waste of nuclear power plants.
Yes.
So there is a tremendous difference as far as energy is concerned between what the Democrats, Republicans, and Greens have a vision as far as energy. Now,
I agree.
Are any of the nine people who are allegedly running for president talking about real dramatic energy changes?
I'm not sure. I haven't been hearing any of them. I know that I live in Vermont, and I'm broadcasting right now from the People's Republic of Vermont. And Howard Dean, when he was our governor, was rather outspoken about these things, although I don't recall any large policy initiatives that came out of his administration. It would be interesting to ask these folks. I think that probably Dean and Kucinich would be the ones who would be the most aggressive about those issues, but frankly, I don't know.
That's the problem. We essentially, you know, continue to have been fighting these wars, and we're so, you know, still dependent on whether it's South American oil, which we are still very strongly dependent upon, or Middle Eastern oil.
Yep.
You know, the differences between some of these candidates is very minute. That's why I'm looking, you know, for some clear alternatives to if some people with some bold steps, because if we continue this process, you know, we're just going to, you know, pollute the planet to the point of death and continue to, you know, funnel, you know, Al Gore had stock in Occidental. You know, that's where his family is coming from. So I see clear differences between the three major parties.
Yeah,
my push.
Yeah, Tim, I'm there with you, and I don't disagree, broadly speaking. On the other hand, and I've often said that I thought that Bill Clinton was one of the best moderate Republican presidents that the United States has had. His policies were not unlike those of Eisenhower broadly, although I think, frankly, Eisenhower was more of a true rational conservative than Bill Clinton was. Back in the old school of conservation, you know, conservative meaning conservation and balanced budgets and worried about the military-industrial complex, whereas Clinton pushed through NAFTA and GATT, something that I'm not willing to forgive him for.
Well, and almost all the other candidates have been, you know, supporters, with the exception, I think, of Sharpton and Kucinich. Dean was for NAFTA and GATT, wasn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah, we've gotten to the point, I'll just close with this, we've gotten to the point where we expect so little from our candidates, and especially progressives, Greens, Democrats, we expect so little that, we, you know, if they give us just the bare bones, we think, oh, that's fantastic, look how horrible, you know, Bush is. And reality is, you know, defeating Bush is just the first step, but we've got to have a much more aggressive policy on energy, human rights, all across the board.
I, you know, Tim, I don't disagree at all, although I'm concerned that the real, think about this for a second, Tim, the real power here is not the presidency, and it's really, in many ways, not even Congress. The reason why, in my opinion, the Republican and Democratic parties have both had to sell out to corporate interests is because of the 1978 Boston versus Pilate Supreme Court decision, which said that corporations are people, should have rights under the Bill of Rights, should have First Amendment rights of free speech. Free speech equals cash, and the free speech in the political arena is a right, and therefore corporations should be able to give cash to political candidates. And that's, you know, under that ruling is why even McCain-Feingold isn't working. And so if the court has so much power, even, I would say, more power than the president and the Congress, and so I think it's important that at the very least we get in. Even, I mean, I cringe to say it, but even Joe Lieberman would be more likely to put somebody on the Supreme Court who's going to represent Democratic values than would George Bush. This is, well, I think this is a huge concern, frankly.
I think it's an inching to foreign policy. As long as the Democrats, you know, essentially slap the people around with their disrespect of campaign finance money and around, you know, raising as much you know, soft money as possible and trying to still use the issue, they look like hypocrites.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I think a lot of people agree with you, and that's why so many people don't vote. Tim, thank you very much for joining us here in our radio home here on the Tom Hartman Program. Tim in Hartford, Connecticut. We'll be back right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Are you wondering how to prosper in our so-called muddle-through economy? Experts say that gold is now the buy of a generation. Hi, I'm Christopher Kent, host of Antique Talk, and I'd like to introduce you to Swiss America, the company that's helping America to rediscover gold. Now, I'm no expert on the economy or on gold, but I am an expert on antiques and collectibles. And Swiss America is the leader in the United States collectible coin market, which has a very impressive track record over the past 30 years. But before you launch out into rare coins, the first step is to get educated. So please, write this number down, 1-800-289-2646, which spells 1-800-BUY-COIN. That's BUYCOIN. Ask for a free copy of The New Gold Rush. It'll help you understand this emerging gold rush so you can stake your claim and tell them Christopher Kent told you to call.
United we stand, shout the red, white, and blue CEOs of America's airlines as they rush to Washington to explain that their industry needs $3 billion in taxpayer subsidies to keep flying in these perilous economic times. Meanwhile, back at headquarters, these same CEOs are shouting quite a different message at their employees. Instead of United we stand, it's you're on your own, as the top dogs are firing thousands and demanding cuts of one-third to one-half in the paychecks of the employees that remain, plus making huge cuts in worker pensions. Well, rump the CEOs, we're accepting cuts in our pay, too. Look at Glenn Tilton, honcho at United Airlines. Poor Glenn took an 11% salary whack last year and is taking another 14% this year, they point out, tears welling in their eyes at the thought of Tilton's sacrifice in the common cause. Yeah, poor Glenn. He's down to only $712,000 in salary this year. But wait, there's more. He's also getting $1.5 million in stock payments this year, a $3 million signing bonus, and a special $4.5 million pension payment. His total haul is nearly $10 million. Talk about your friendly skies. Likewise, old Leo Mullins at Delta Airlines says he's cutting his salary to barely $600,000 this year, as well as giving up some $6 million in bonuses and stock payments. What a guy, huh? Before giving him the Golden Heart Award, however, let's note that he quietly is pocketing millions in corporate cash for a special pension fund he set up for himself this year, including extra payments to cover the taxes that he will owe on the special pension. Now that's putting the gold in the golden years, isn't it? This is Jim Hightower saying, Senator John McCain believes we should not bail out airlines until these CEO ripoffs end. To back McCain's effort, call him, 202-224-2235.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posted a message to our web message board today at tomhartman.com. He says, it doesn't surprise... Bill's really pushing the boundaries here. He says, it doesn't surprise me that W is the only president ever with a criminal record. Aside from his entire agenda being criminal, it appears he likes to surround himself with a den of thieves. His budget director, Mitch Daniel, has been charged with insider trading and just resigned. Mitch Daniels, by the way, is the guy that George W. Said to whom George W. said when 9/11 happened, I hit the trifecta. Richard Pearl is giving seminars on how companies can profit from wars and conflict while simultaneously giving seminars to Bush as chairman of the Defense Advisory Board on how to start wars. Harvey Pitt, we're reading from Bill in Illinois. Harvey Pitt defended Michael Milken tooth and nail against the United States for too many criminal securities acts to count. The United States lost $1 trillion to Milken. Great choice to head up the SEC. The grand soap opera in Washington just keeps getting better and better. I wonder who will get caught next, says Bill in Illinois. Yeah, and, you know, we have to, I think, you know, as much as this stuff is going on in this administration, we have to acknowledge that this has been going on in various forms and various ways for a long, long time. I think the big difference between this administration and, for example, the Clinton administration is that any little thing that happened in the Clinton administration got blasted across the press of the corporate-controlled media in America. And in the giant, vast echo chamber of the right-wing talk machine, using their daily talking points from the Republican National Committee and from the right-wing think tanks, all echoing the same tune, whereas in this administration, when things that had Clinton done them, he would have gotten blasted for. When this administration does things, it merits maybe a 3-inch story in the New York Times, and that even then becomes the subject of the bullies on the right saying, how dare they talk about this kind of stuff? They can't make us look bad. Well, for example, today in the New York Times, an article about the Spanish leader visiting President Bush, Jose Maria Aznar, visited with Bush, and President Bush today rewarded one of his most loyal supporters in the Iraq war, Prime Minister Jose Maria Aznar of Spain, with a meeting in the Oval Office, a dinner at the White House, and the inclusion of a radical Basque nationalist party on the State Department list of international terrorist groups, which is something that the Spanish Prime Minister has been asking for. The New York Times says neither leader mentioned an explicit quid pro quo, but neither had to. Mr. Bush made it clear that good things were in store for Spain in exchange for its support of the United States during the 6-week American-led war. On the other hand, they point out, in contrast, Mr. Bush has said that Prime Minister Jacques Chirac of France, who actively worked against the United States on Iraq, will not be a ranch guest anytime soon. Senior administration advisors are meanwhile seeking ways to punish France for what they consider the country's rebellious behavior. How dare they defy our nation? Condoleezza Rice, Mr. Bush's national security advisor, went so far today as to accuse France of trying to take NATO hostage and of threatening smaller countries that had backed the White House position on the war. What wasn't included in that story is that a draft law to change the Spanish military code was being released in Spain at the same time the Spanish prime minister was meeting with Bush. This law, and I quote, proposes that participation in public acts opposing military intervention in a situation of armed conflict could lead to prison sentences of between 1 and 6 years for the people involved if convicted of the new crime called defeatism. Civilians could find themselves before military courts. The proposal would severely limit freedom of expression and political activity. Here's an actual quote from the law that was proposed as the Spanish Prime Minister was meeting with Bush. Quote, a person who, in a situation of armed conflict of an international nature in which Spain is involved, with the aim of discrediting Spain's participation in the conflict, publicly carries out acts against it, will be punished with a sentence of between 1 and 6 years in prison. The same penalty will apply to persons who divulge false news or information with the aim of weakening the morale of the population to provoke disloyalty or a lack of spirit among members of the Spanish military, end quote. In other words, if you protest against the war, you go to prison in Spain. Very interesting. Tom Hartman on the IE America Network. We'll be right back.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me.
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Got plenty of coal to meet our energy needs, but an author says burning it would take a huge toll on the environment. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The United States burns more coal today than ever before, according to Barbara Fries, the author of Coal, A Human History.
I think that surprises a lot of people because, of course, we think of coal as a fuel of the past, and relatively speaking, of course, we did get a lot more of our energy from coal as a percentage, but we get more in absolute terms today. It's just that it's invisible. It's burned in power plants, so we don't see it and we don't think about it.
90% of U.S. coal goes into power plants, and our demand for electricity continues to grow. Some estimates say we have 200 years' worth of coal left in the ground, but Fries says it could warm the climate to a dangerous degree because burning coal releases carbon into the atmosphere.
Even if we could burn it for a century without worrying about supplies, we have a very big problem with climate change, and it's going to be, I think, a much more immediate constraint on our coal and other fossil fuel consumption than supply issues.
Fries compares coal deposits to a huge bank account of stored solar energy. It took nature tens of millions of years to pack all that carbon into the ground, and she says we're withdrawing those savings at a rapid rate.
We are on quite a spending spree, and of course, we haven't really planned for our retirement. We haven't figured out what we're going to do when we run out of this. You know, we've always known we would. We've always known that the fossil fuel age wasn't going to last forever. What's happened, though, is that climate change has made it clear to us that we don't have even as long as we thought.
That's Barbara Fries, author of Coal, A Human History. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting coast to coast on radio stations, on the Sirius satellite, and streaming live on the Internet from www.ieamericaradio.com and radiopower.org. Every week on Thursday afternoon, we have a segment where we explore the boundaries of what maybe we thought we understood, but maybe we don't. It's our Maybe Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Is it possible everything we know is wrong? Our guest in this segment this half hour is Dr. Stanley Monteith. He's a native of California, a former orthopedic surgeon in Santa Cruz. He's the author of a couple of books, his most recent, The Brotherhood of Darkness, about the secret societies that are controlling the world. Dr. Monteith, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good to be with you.
Thank you. I spent some time with your book, and it seems to me that you're suggesting that the Masons, or the Masonic Order, and the Illuminati are the big nasty power, as it were, behind things. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's not simply the Masons or the Illuminati. There are many groups. We talk about the Council on Foreign Relations, which is everybody now hears about the Council on Foreign Relations. 20 years ago, it was never mentioned by the controlled media. Today, they just take it for granted. But nobody tells you where the Council on Foreign Relations came from. And it is really a front organization for a secret society that was founded in the occult. It was founded in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes. How do we know that? Well, of course, I've been through their secret files. I know what they've done. And, of course, I think the major researcher on this was a man named Professor Carol Quigley, a liberal historian from Georgetown University, but he taught at both Harvard and Princeton before he went to Georgetown, and his most famous student was William Jefferson Clinton. And Professor Quigley had researched the secret society that became the Council on Foreign Relations and tied it to the Rhodes Scholarships, and that's why Bill Clinton became a Rhodes Scholar. But you ask me, who's behind this? Well, we have the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission. Certainly we have the Lucius Trust, a powerful, powerful organization most people have never heard of. The Masons are there. Certainly the Masons in the past were much more important than they are today. In fact, everybody knows that the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools in 1962. But what nobody in America will tell you is why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools, and that's because the Masons controlled the Supreme Court from 1941 to 1971 in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1.
Starting with that nasty Franklin Roosevelt, who was a Mason.
And both Masons, and they packed the Supreme Court with Masons. And, of course, the purpose was to change America from a Christian or Judeo-Christian society to a secular society so we could be merged into this new world order. Now, most Masons don't
understand. Dr. Monty, can I stop you? You're just kind of running along here, and I'd like to have a dialogue with you, if you don't mind. And I have a couple of questions. First of all, I'm wondering, just kind of anecdotally, are you familiar with the Thule Society in Germany?
T-H-U-L-E. Society, and of course this ties into the Nazi movement.
Yes, Hitler was an initiate in the Thule Society, a society whose initiation rituals involved drinking blood from a skull, and their emblem was a cross pair of human bones and things like that. If the U.S.
Hello?
Hello? We're back?
You were talking about the Thule Society.
Right. I'm sorry. We had a hiccup on the telephone line here between Vermont and our studio in Detroit.
Okay.
And I dropped out. If the U.S. was founded by the Masons, and I think that there's a pretty good historical record that it was, are you suggesting that the United States was, you know, somehow corrupted or evil or?
Well, what we have to understand is there's been two forces in America. This is what everybody's missed. There were two forces here. One was the Christian or Judeo-Christian force. The other was the Masons. And the occult organizations came here even before Masonry was founded. They came here in 1640, 1648. They were a group of Rosicrucians sent by Francis Bacon to the United States to take over America with the idea that America would lead the world into this new world order that we're going into today. Long-term planning. In fact, it was to be the new Atlantis. And it was this small group of occultists who later went into the Masons, which were organized in 1717 in Great Britain, who actually put that mysterious seal on the back of the Great Seal of the United States. It's what we today see on the back of the American dollar bill. It was placed there in 1935 by FDR. So there have been the two forces, one good and one evil here in the United States.
Right, okay. Dr. Stanley Monteith, the author of Brotherhood of Darkness, and certain that there is a number of groups that are up to no good here. Roy from Rancho Rio, New Mexico, would like to make a comment about our guest. Roy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
It's Rio Rancho, New Mexico.
Rio Rancho.
Your guest lost all credibility with me with the flat, bald-faced, either lie or purposeful misstatement of fact. The Supreme Court did not take God out of the schools, didn't take prayer out of the schools, just said that my kid couldn't be forced to pray to some God that somebody wanted him to pray to.
Right.
That's all. Every time my kid ever had a math test, I can guarantee you he prayed.
Right. Right, I think we've lost you. Dr. Monteith, did you hear that?
Yes, of course. Well, I think most of your listeners will realize that certainly the Supreme Court took any acknowledgement of God or prayer out of our schools, so that could not be mentioned by a teacher. And of course, they began teaching evolution, but you couldn't teach creation. And the whole purpose was to destroy the faith of a generation of our children.
Right, and there is no such thing as evolution. The Mormons adopted the Masonic underwear and much of the structure of the Masons. Do you think that the Mormons are an evil cult?
I believe that they basically have the same philosophy that was preached in the Garden of Eden. And, of course, you have to understand there are only two religions in the world. There's the God of the Bible and the other religions. They all tie together. And what did the serpent say to Eve? Why, eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and you could be as gods. And the Mormons teach that as Christ was, we can become as Christ once was, we are, as Christ is.
You know, I recall, Dr. Monteith, in the 16th or 17th or 18th chapter of John, I don't want to get into splitting, religious hairs here with you, but that in the little discussion that Jesus had with his disciples before he was crucified at the Last Supper, he said, "These things I have done, you shall do also." And don't you think that the Mormons are just talking about that?
No, they really believe they can become gods and have an earth just like Jesus Christ does.
I see. Okay. Now, what about the Skull and Bones Society, Dr. Monteith? Can you tell us about the Skull and Bones Society?
It is a secret occult organization. It was formed in 1832. And, of course, they have pagan rites. There's a wonderful book out. It's called The Secrets of the Tomb. In fact, we carry it through our ministry. And in that, of course, Alexandra Robbins puts out a lot of information that was fed to her by the Masons.
And this Skull and Bone Society is the society that both George Bushes were members of and Prescott Bush was a member of.
Absolutely.
Do you think that the Bushes are also part of this conspiracy?
I think I would feel far better if George W. Bush would renounce the occult oaths he's sworn, because it is a pagan society. But let's look at George Herbert Walker.
But it doesn't look like he's going to renounce any of this stuff. Bonesmen working with him in the White House. Are you familiar with the Bohemian Grove?
Oh, yes, certainly. In fact, we have a four-tape set, the only four-tape set that anybody will find on that. And
Ronald Reagan was a member of the Bohemian Grove, Reagan was a member of the Bohemian Grove. Most of the heads of the major defense contractors in the United States are members. Henry Kissinger, all these folks. Is this the secret society that's running the stuff behind the stuff in America? In your opinion?
No, there are multiple organizations,
but it's one of them.
All are occult organizations. They are all part of this other religion. Certainly, at the Bohemian Grove, they have a 40-foot owl. They have these occult ceremonies of feigned human sacrifice, at least.
Right, and they worship the owl and they wear these red and silver things. We've got Billy on who would like to speak with you. He's in Capitola, California. Billy, welcome to the program. You have a question for Dr. Stanley Monteith, the author of Brotherhood of Darkness.
Hi, Dr. Stan. This is Billy Sunshine.
Hi, Billy.
How are you?
Fine. How are you?
You know, as a fellow Santa Cruzan, I know that you're an important part of the Republican Party here, and that you are, you know, believe in an angry God, not a loving God. And as a result of the kind of things you believe, the Republican Party is a joke in Santa Cruz, is unable to get support from anyone. Why is it, do you think, that America continues to give nut bars like you time on the air?
Well, thank you for your very nice compliment.
I don't mean to be nice, because you're not nice.
Yeah.
No, we don't need to be nice.
Billy, are you upset that I have Dr. Monteith on the program? Is that your point?
Well, yeah, here's my point, yeah. My point is that people like Monteith, Reverend Falwell, evil people who want to tell you who goes to heaven and who doesn't, should get a little less time than they do, and there should be a lot more atheists on, people who tell the truth, people who understand that either God doesn't exist, or that if he did, the people who believe in him, like Dr. Stan, obviously really don't trust him to do their work. They always seem to be out there trying to bash the homosexual. Why don't they let God punish him in the afterlife if it existed?
Yeah, good point, Billy. Okay, Dean from Santa Fe. Billy, thank you very much for being on the program here with us. Dean from Santa Fe would also like to make a comment for Dr. Monteith. Dean, go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. As someone who has studied a lot of what I would call spiritual technologies, ranging from, Aleister Crowley, the OTO, and other occult-type groups, I guess I also believe that there are certain occult threads that run throughout societies, that run throughout society and have for generations. I'm just wondering how you separate, you or anyone else, or me or anyone, separate the genuine spiritual technologies that might evolve from, say, the Kabbalah or ritualistic practice of some sort or anything involving contacting the divine from the overlays of political and intelligence operations and so forth that seem to get mixed up in the two. And
It seems like they're not being separated here, Dean. I mean, Dr. Monteith is saying that George W. Bush is a member of one of the more pernicious and destructive secret society, two of them, in fact, the Bohemian Grove and the Skull and Bone Society. Of course, he likes to pick on Bill Clinton. That's the obligatory Republican thing. Pardon me for interrupting your question here.
I haven't even mentioned Bill Clinton.
What happens, aren't there a kind of external aspects that maybe get adopted by various societies that use occult type things? Like maybe there are certain perversions that are used to keep you, once the person participates in it, to keep them in line so they won't spill other things. But maybe they aren't really as spiritually occult as they are using the trappings of that to keep its members in line. It's just such a... I don't know how you easily separate the strands.
Well, I don't blame you for being confused. That's why I wrote Brotherhood of Darkness, and I hope you'll get it. Could I put out my 800 number so he would know where to go to get the information? Because I think it's
sure.
A,
that's
it,
that's
it,
fine.
It,
you've been willing to tolerate our impertinent questions. We can certainly put your 800 number out.
It's 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927.
Okay. Now, how about answering Dean's question?
Are you familiar with Michael Hoffman's work, for instance?
I've read some of it, but I'm not one of his followers. But you have to let's put it this way: there are multiple organizations out there, and these go back, really tie into the mystery religions of antiquity. And you'll find out that Plato and Aristotle and Alexander the Great was a disciple of the mysteries. Now, basically, there are two religions, in my opinion, and this is my opinion. One is the God of the Bible, and the other, of course, are these dark religions that tell you there's great power if you'll just tap into them. Look within yourself to find the answers to the problem.
Like Hinduism and Buddhism and Islam, do you mean?
Absolutely. Well, of course, Islam believes in an external God, that is God Allah.
Well, they believe in the God of the Bible, don't they?
No.
Islam, of course, they do.
So Dr. Monteith is living in a very black and white world. You're either with us or against us.
The people of the book. That's what Muhammad always said. Islam, Christianity, and Judaism all share the same roots. And the reason that the Muslims pray to Mecca is because the Jews at the time wouldn't accept the Islamic aspect, and so he had people turn to Mecca rather than to Jerusalem.
Well, in my opinion, the God of the Muslim religion is Allah. He was the moon god. And, of course, there were a number of pagan gods. They just picked him as the supreme of the gods.
But Dr. Monteith, we've moved the Sabbath from Saturday to Sunday because the Romans worshipped the god of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are you suggesting that all those people who worship on Sunday are pagans also?
No, not at all. I think that
but it's the day of the sun god.
That is done by contemporary religion, which, as you point out, have sort of carried over some of the pagan practices. For instance, what we have today, we celebrate Easter, but that used to be the old spring festival.
The goddess Ikthar, the Greek goddess Ikthar, where they used to eat eggs. It was a fertility ritual for the spring fields.
And this is where we get into trouble with organized religion that, of course, goes on tradition and sometimes gets far, far away from the teachings of Holy Scripture.
Dr. Monteith, thank you very much for being a guest on our program. I really appreciate your being available to us. Dean from Santa Fe, thank you very much for your comments. This has been our...
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
And is everything you know wrong? Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? Every week on Thursday at 1:30 Eastern Standard Time, we will look at these kinds of questions. this very, pushing the edges of reality. Is it possible that there are secret societies running the country? Is it we'll get into some interesting topics, hopefully. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back after this break.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day. Don't like the sound of that?
Tough. You got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them who, what, where, when. Questions. They're the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 for more information. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
And now, our motivational speaker, Carl!
Who's ready to reach their inner winner?
Allergies have your sinuses congested? Afrin No-Drip Nasal Spray starts to relieve congestion instantly. Sudafed takes up to 30 minutes to start working. And after 4 hours, Afrin still does a better job keeping nasal passages open.
Ah, now I feel like a winner.
Breathe better in an Afrin instant. Use as directed. Compared to Sudafed maximum strength 60 milligrams.
Right now, during deer season, your John Deere dealer's offering special incentives on all lawn and garden tractors. Not that you need any incentive. After all, you put the mow in motivation, the zing in fertilizing. We simply want to reward that passion with offers that help you buy a tractor with the durability, versatility, and exclusive support someone with your commitment so richly deserves. So head into deer season. There's nothing like it, and nothing runs like a deer.
At participating John Deere dealers through July 7th.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
hey, Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Thank you.
bringing you uncommon sense. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. One of Lao Tzu's basic rules of war is that you must know your enemy. I think it's important. With all respect to Billy, I really, from California, I really appreciate Billy, your calling in and joining us here on our radio home on the Tom Hartman Program here. And I want to try and get a few more of these kind of right-wing wackos on the show from time to time anyway, because it's interesting for us to understand their worldview. We have Stacy from New Orleans, who's the author of Religious Conceit. Stacy, you wanted to comment on this last segment.
Absolutely. The argument the good doctor was trying to put forth is a very old argument. It was originally, in the United States anyway, proposed during the 1820s, although back then it was the Freemasons.
Right.
It actually gave birth to the anti-Mason party, which eventually became the Whig Party, which is now the GOP.
Right, which became the Republicans, yeah.
Yeah. Well, GOP, for the grand old party, is nostalgic for what it used to be, which is, you know, an ancient conspiracy theory of an underground cult of pagans.
Oh, that's interesting.
With that,
you mean the Grand Old Party refers to an anti-pagan cult or to a pro-pagan cult?
It refers to the Masons because the founding fathers were Masons.
Were Masons. Right. The Federalists were all Masons, and the Federalists self-destructed in the 1830s, and the Whigs arose, and then in the 1850s, it was earlier than that, and the Whigs came up, and then they crashed, and the Republicans came up, right?
Right. Well,
we got about 30 seconds here, Stacy. Okay.
Well, the first party to exist with a real platform was the Anti-Mason Party, and it came about right after the Illustrations of Masonry and the assassination of the guy who wrote it by the Masons.
Fascinating.
Which gave birth to, you know, all this secret cult that, you know, we need to get them out of government and all that.
Right. All the radical paranoia, which then, you know, you could even say you could trace to Joe McCarthy, you know, and his excesses. Stacy, thank you very much for sharing that with us. We had another caller who said there is a secret society running America. It's called the Carlyle Group. And interesting, in today's Wall Street Journal, there's an article about how the U.S. Army has taken one of the officers received an order to take the television station in Mosul off the air. Wow. Because why? Because they were broadcasting Arabic news. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. We'll see you here tomorrow.
This ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com.